This is KERA News. I'm Justin Martin. Autism affects about 1 in 68 children, and one of the symptoms of the disorder are difficulties with processing social interactions, things like facial expressions and physical gestures. New research out of North Texas is offering hope for restoring some of that social functioning through a process called neuromodulation. Peter Tsai is with UT Southwestern Medical Center and is here to talk about their research. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
How does autism affect the brain?
You know, I think there's a lot of different ways that it affects the brain. So, you know, I think if you take a step back, autism is a heterogeneous set of diseases. And I see kids at the Center for Autism and Developmental Disabilities. And if you have 10 kids that come into the clinic, you're going to get 10 different kids with 10 different problems. And one of the changes that you do see in certain forms of autism is the degree of activity within the brain, you know, and kind of as a hallmark, for the most part, you know, scientists will think that there is increased activity kind of in different circuits within the brain.
And how does that impair a person?
I feel like one of the things that makes us uniquely human in some ways is that social ability and that desire to group together, a kind of work as communities and as societies. And if you can imagine, right, if this is something that is impaired in terms of your function, you can't do it well, or if you don't seek it out, you are suddenly no longer belonging to that community and to that society, that you know, will create a significant impact on kind of who you are and kind of the joy that you seek out of life.
Your research looks specifically into neuromodulation. What is that, and how can it restore social function?
What we've been looking at is a variety of techniques that use a variety of genetic tools to increase that activity or decrease that activity of certain circuits within the brain.
So this study was conducted on mice.
Yes.
Did it restore any social functions in them after? Did they group up? How was it measured, I guess?
We do a number of different paradigms where we look at their social behavior. So mice are social. They want to interact with one another. And this autism model really doesn't like to interact with, you know, kind of new social stimuli. And so what we did is, with modulation, we then put these animals back into the paradigm, and now suddenly these animals were actually able and interested in interacting socially with those other animals that it had not done before.
Are we that similar to mice?
So this is a fascinating question. You know, we as biologists joke to ourselves, hey, you know, we're just mice without tails. Obviously, that is way off the mark, right? So we wanted to know, is what we're seeing in the mouse actually translatable to humans? And so what we did was we actually, using neuromodulation, we were able to demonstrate that we could change brain activity in various different parts of the brain by stimulating or inhibiting, modulating these particular cerebellar regions. We're also able to show that in our autism model that there were disrupted circuits between these particular regions, the cerebellum and these cortical regions.
Your research provides the first evidence that a specific part of the brain is responsible for autistic behaviors. What did research indicate before this for that area of the brain?
This region, really, if you go into the internet and you say, okay, what does the cerebellum do? What does it do? And it will say it coordinates motor movements. And this has really been the dogma for the past 100 or so years, to the point where actually when I went through my child neurology training, this is what I was taught. And so I remember seeing a kid during my residency who had a cerebellar injury of some variety, and this kid did not come in with balance problems. He didn't come in with motor problems. He came in and he looked like a kid with autism. And I said, this makes no sense at all. Like, how does this compute? And then I said, well, maybe this is just an exception. I'll move on. Maybe this is just completely not related. And then the next kid that came in with kind of inflammation of the cerebellum, then and other kids came in and they look autistic. And I was like, okay, maybe I shouldn't be ignoring this, right? And then when you actually look at the details, it's just amazing that when you look at these studies of autism, again, pathology studies, the most consistent finding is cerebellum. There's a cerebellar abnormality in these kids with autism. And then if you look at imaging studies, whether it be by function, connectivity, volume, all of these really highlight the cerebellum as being disrupted in kids and individuals with autism.
Peter Tsai with the O'Donnell Brain Institute at UT Southwestern Medical Center. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.